Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy Sports and Politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You want to talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports.
Hello? Hello? No, this is not Vic Gardner. This is not Vic Gardner. Like I said last week, for those who didn't listen last week and are just tuning in this week, Vic is going to be on an extended hiatus. I'll be filling in. And if you don't know who I am, I'm JT. Jerry Taylor is my name, a.k.a. The Master. I do other shows. And I also co-host the show. So in Vic's absence, I'll be taking over probably for the next couple of months. There's no health problems. It's just the fact is Mr. Gardner has a commitment that he has to do for an extended period of time. And like I said, I'll be the man taking his place. And I hope I can do as well a job as he has done in the past episodes and over the years. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. I'll say that again, 347-637-3220. We're going to be talking about the Super Bowl for one. I know it's been a week ago, but we're going to be talking about that for a little bit. And we're also going to be talking about some other things in sports. And if you'd like to put your comments in the chat room is open for your convenience. Like I always say when I'm on the other programs when I host them, chat room, put your comments, your questions, make a statement if you like. It's open, like I said, for your convenience. And if you like to do so, please do. If you'd rather not call in and voice your opinion on anything that I have to say, it is what it is, okay? All right, Super Bowl, okay? On several programs, I made some statements about who I liked, and I thought I made a pretty strong argument for what I liked about the 49ers. Unfortunately, things did not pan out the way they should have, in my opinion. The 49ers, which have been habitual for the last few games, got off to a very extremely slow start. Quite naturally, it was 21-6 going into halftime. Beyonce did her thing, came out, opening kickoff, Ravens had chosen to receive the ball in a coin toss. In the beginning of the game, opening kickoff, Ravens get the ball. Jacoby Jones receives the kickoff 8 yards into the end zone. And what happens? He runs back, and before you know it, the 49ers are down 28-6. And then now a lot of people, including the room I was in with the amount of people were in, the amount of people that were in that room, said, this game is over. And I always say this, and this is my mantra for as long as I can't remember. I always say, and I got texts also from several people, this game is over, basically saying this game is over. I said, in the room I was at, I text the people that text me, it ain't over. This game ain't over. And just like that, the lights go out shortly after the kickoff return, and for 34 minutes, it took for the lights to come back on enough for them to continue playing. When they started playing again, the 49ers came back within 4 points, if I'm not mistaken, 4 points, 5 points, whatever it was. But they made it a game. Let me put it that way. They made it a game. Like I said, it wasn't over. They made it a game. For all intents and purposes, the Ravens could not move the ball. 49ers were moving the ball at will, up and down the field. I think it's a matter of play calling and not being able to execute the plays properly caused them to not be able to, near the end of the game, to be able to punch it into the end zone. I don't think it was as much as the Ravens' defense as much as the 49ers' play calling, for one. And like I said, lack of execution. Now, my opinion is this. When you're down at the end zone, you run one running play. Okay. And then you run three passing plays. You don't even give the ball or even have an opportunity for Colin Kaepernick to run with the ball. He had one rushing touchdown in his game already. And you took that option out of the equation with throwing three passes, the last being on fourth down, a fade to Michael Crabtree. And in some opinions, depending on what side of the ball you were rooting for, it either was defensive holding. I don't think it was pass interference. It either was defensive holding or it was a clean play. In my opinion, like a lot of others that were pushing for the 49ers, but I try to look at things objectively, and the referee, it was depending on the referee and depending on the officials, it either could have been called or it couldn't have been called. It was some referees call all the penalties. Some referees let them play. For all intents and purposes, I think the referees in the Super Bowl let them play. And I kind of understand why he didn't call it, but if you're going to call something like that in the beginning of the game or the middle of the game, then you should be able to call it at the end of the game. But it wasn't called. I saw something on the internet about the DB said that Crabtree ran into him, which, I mean, okay, he ran it. He did run into him, all right, but the reason I think he ran into him is because the fact is he wanted to be able to run into the DB, create separation when he decided to go to the corner of the end zone. So in essence, it was going to be a push-off going to the corner of the end zone with Colin Kaepernick throwing a fade. And it just didn't work out. I wouldn't have called that play. I mean, you only ran one half-hearted run play. And that didn't work out. And then you just immediately went to the pass. And the clock management was absolutely horrible in its second half. They burned an early timeout in the third quarter. You burned a timeout. Rather than take a delay a game, it was a 5-yard penalty. So you could save that and if the Ravens got the ball. So you only were really left with one timeout when the Ravens, when you didn't make the fourth down touchdown, with the Ravens getting the ball and you weren't able to stop the clock. So you only got the ball when the Ravens finally took a safety and spent some more time out of the clock. You only got about 4 seconds after the Ravens lined up to punt the ball to you, and you wound up with the ball on the 20. I think you got to the 40, 45, and then in essence, well, I didn't say in essence, it was over because the time was 4-0. So I understand some of this stuff, but I don't know if it was the inexperience. Boy, it's just circumstance. And then the coach comes back in a press conference following the game, and in a press conference a few days after the game, saying that if you're going to call it, if you're going to call it holding or defensive interference, pass interference or whatever it is, you should call it. If it's it is what it is. If it's a penalty, you should call it. So I don't know. You know, you could take Jim Harbaugh's as being sour. Well, I understand he's being sour because the fact is that they lost the game, and in the fashion they lost the game. But you have to hold yourself accountable for some of what happened in the closing minutes of that game, and also some of the play calling perhaps earlier, maybe in the first half or in the second half, to put your quarterback. I mean, I understand he ran for one touchdown, but I don't think you completely let your quarterback loose and let him run. Have some running plays. Be more explosive. You depended on your running back, Frank Gore, who ran for over 100 yards. You depending on Michael Crabtree, who caught the ball for over 100 yards. But I don't think you completely used all your weapons. I understand your game was 34-31. I understand that. But in the first half, you were down 26-6. I mean, 21-6. And then you got 28-6. I understand he had to be throwing the ball out. But Colin Kaepernick, you made a commitment to this guy, okay? You made a commitment to this guy. I don't think you actually had a lot of faith in him. I understand you had faith in him to throw the ball. But if you have faith in him to throw the ball, why not use one of your options to run the ball? He did not get a chance to run the ball at all. You had a handoff to Frank Gore, like I said, and then you ran three passing plays in the end zone. Fourth down. Come on, Jim. Come on. Colin is just as explosive as Vernon Davis, Michael Crabtree, and Frank Gore. So you tried Michael Crabtree, didn't work. You tried Frank Gore, didn't work. You tried Vernon Davis, didn't work. Well, you know, the X factor in your offense, and people were talking about it, and I know you know it, that's why you put him in there, is Colin Kaepernick. And for all intents and purposes, I don't think you had a lot of faith or as much faith in Colin near the end of the game. I really don't believe that. I understand what happened. I understand what you were trying to accomplish at the end of the game, but the end result is this. And you know what? Let me do this. Okay? Going to the fourth quarter. Let's go to the fourth quarter. Let's go to the fourth quarter here. And see what we can see here. I'm going to see the play-by-play in the fourth quarter. San Francisco's get the ball at the San Francisco 20. Okay. Here we go. All right. They get it down to the Baltimore 7. They give the ball to Michael James. He rushes for 2 yards. I know I'm rehashing this, but I'm trying to get you people to understand what I'm talking about here. Michael James rushes over the right guard for 2 yards to the Baltimore 5. Okay? He gets tackled. The next pass is second and at the Baltimore 5, right? Second and goal. Pass, incomplete pass to Michael Crabtree. Third and goal. Incomplete pass. In fact, you didn't get to Vernon Davis. Maybe he was covered. Or Randy Moss. Another incomplete pass to Michael Crabtree. And the fourth, an incomplete pass to Michael Crabtree. Now, I understand these incomplete passes stop the clock. I understand that. But you don't. There's no imagination there. There is no imagination there. Everyone thinks that you're going to pass the ball, and that's what you did. And I think that's why, because the Baltimore defense was not, it wasn't that good. They weren't that good. Where was Frank Gore? You didn't give the ball to Frank Gore. You didn't even give the ball or let Colin Kaepernick run the ball. You called three pass plays. Your bread and butter is running the ball. Even with LaMichael James, for 2 yards, the Baltimore 7. The play before that, they were at the Baltimore 40. And who gets the ball? Frank Gore. Frank gets the ball and runs for 33 yards to the Baltimore 7. What happened to Frank Gore after that? Is he in the game? Is he just blocking? Is he going to use him as a blocker now? They were running basically at will. To start that drive off, now San Francisco gets the ball in the fourth quarter with 4:19 left in the game. The first and 10, and they're at their 20, all right? Frank Gore gets the ball. He rushes over the right guard for 8 yards, okay? The second. Okay, second and 2 at the San Francisco 28. Colin Kaepernick rushes over the right end for 8 yards. So that's two guys I'm talking about. Colin Kaepernick, Frank Gore. Two consecutive plays, they run for 8 yards. Okay? First and 10 at the San Francisco 36. Colin has a pass incomplete to Vernon Davis. Okay, second and 10 at the San Francisco 36. Colin Kaepernick pass complete to Michael Crabtree for 24 yards. And he's tackled at the Baltimore 40. All right? And like I said, after that, they're at the 40. First and 10 at the Baltimore 40 gets the ball. Frank Gore goes for 33 yards. So every time you've gotten the ball, the last two times Frank Gore got the ball, the first time on the San Francisco 20, he ran for 8 yards. The second time he gets the ball again, only a second time, he rushes for 33 yards. So that's twice he gets the ball, he runs for 41 yards. Two times he runs for 41 yards, okay? And then LaMichael James comes in. I understand that. LaMichael James comes in because Frank Gore's probably getting a little gas. He shouldn't be, but for some reason he's not in the game. He didn't say he got hurt. LaMichael James runs for 2 yards. What happened to Frank Gore, okay? What happened to Frank Gore? And then you run three passing plays. You've been running all over this team. You've been moving the ball at will, running all over this team. And you go for three pass plays. I don't get it. I don't get it. That's why I'm upset, because, like I said, that's why I said I don't think it was as much as the Baltimore defense as it was the San Francisco execution and play calling. I really believe that. If you look, you break down, I just broke it down to you, their last drive getting to the Baltimore 5. They rushed the ball and they passed the ball. They mixed it up. And they made better yardage overall running the ball than they did passing the ball. And what do they do when they get to the five? They get to the five with first and, they get to the seven. First and goal at the seven. One rushing play. Frank Gore is not even rushing the ball. LaMichael James gets the ball. And then three consecutive pass plays to Michael Crabtree. I don't get it. And, you know, when I think about it, I'm saying, and then in between the, I think it's in between the third and the fourth, they call a timeout. No, in between the second and third down, they call a timeout with 1:55 left in the game because they were going to get a delay of game, either because of Colin Kaepernick didn't get the play on time, or they took too long to get in the play, or he got confused. Just don't know exactly what happened there, but they call a timeout with less than 2 minutes left in the game, which was their second timeout. What happened? They had the game in their hand. It all came down to two things: play calling and the execution of the play. Now, I don't like three passing plays. I understand it. Maybe one. And then try to break it up with another pass play. But this is the game here. This is the game. You don't want to spend any more time with Baltimore getting the ball back. You want it to end the game with you getting the ball. And in that case, you run the ball. You have timeouts to deal with. You run the ball. Okay? I can't believe it. You're running the ball all that's how, for the most part, got you down to the 5-yard line, 7-yard line. Running the ball. You had one pass play. One pass play to Michael Crabtree. But for all intents and purposes, you ran the ball. They couldn't stop you. And you pass. That's what's so frustrating. And I know Jim Harbaugh is thinking, you know what? We were running all day on these guys. They were gassed. They were tired. They're the older of the two teams. That's one of the things I stressed. I figured they would have be more energetic, show more force in the first half, but by the time the second half, especially the fourth quarter, came down, and it was a fact that older defense was getting tired. And that was the more of the reason to run the ball, because they could not keep up with them young legs. So what happened? And Vic Gardner, God bless him, he's a good friend of mine, okay? He said that the Baltimore will win it. But they're very fortunate to win it because the simple fact is if they ran the ball like they should have, Baltimore would not have been able to keep up with them. They weren't keeping up with them. That's a stone-cold fact. They were not keeping up with them. And he decided when it got to the goal line to pass the ball. You had timeouts. You could have used them. And I'm telling you, the hurry-up would probably even kill Baltimore versus you taking your time at each play and working in that way. When you got down there, you had 1:55 when you called a timeout. So what happened? What happened, Jim? I can't believe, I know the players. I'm not a player. I'm a fan. I'm a football fan. I'm a fan. My team is the Texans. But I honestly, with my core, because of the fact is this was a younger team. This was going to be a team that could wear down the Baltimore Ravens. I had said earlier, in the beginning of the season, that defense is not what it used to be. And it wasn't. Even though it played a little better into the playoffs, but they played against Tom Brady. They played against Peyton Manning. This is older teams, especially on defense, older teams, and not too good defense. I mean, Denver was a decent defense, but their backfield, the defensive backfield, was older. and they made a hell of a play with Jacoby Jones to win that game in double overtime against New England. They play New England very well. New England's defense is very suspect, and it proved out. But you have a very good offense, very good defense. Now, the special teams, I understand it scored a touchdown. Okay, that happens. I mean, and Vic said that the special teams will come and play. Well, okay, for the most part, he scored a touchdown. But I don't think that was a deciding touchdown. He scored a touchdown. I understand that. But they came back from after he did that. They came back and made this game very close. And they had the game in their grasp. And like I said earlier in the show when I talked about it, I don't think it's much as the Ravens' defense versus the execution and the play calling of the San Francisco 49ers. I really believe that. Now, when I say execution, some of these pass plays could have been executed better. Maybe Michael Crabtree could have ran a better route in the fourth on the fourth down. But I think the play calling was the real evident thing here that could have played a vital part in whether the San Francisco 49ers were losers or winners in that game. And like I said, and I've gone on for almost a half hour about this, but that's how strongly I felt that the Niners would prevail in this game, and they didn't. And then Baltimore gets the ball with 1:46, they call a timeout. It had Ray Rice rush for 2 yards quite naturally. San Francisco's going to call his final timeout. Then they had another rushing play quite naturally, which makes sense, with no gain. Then they had another running play because they're trying to run the clock out, which makes sense. I understand that. And if they had other timeouts, they could have used them, but they didn't. They only had one timeout left. Baltimore runs it down to 12 seconds. And then at 4th and 7, Baltimore takes a safety, which only leaves 4 seconds by the time the Ravens kick it off to the 49ers. And Tank Ginn runs back for 31 yards, and the game ends with San Francisco having the ball on the 50-yard line. So it was a tale of two games. Baltimore won the first half and the early part of the third quarter for all intents and purposes. And then it was the 49ers after the delay. And a lot of people talk about the delay was the reason why the 49ers came back. Well, it's delayed on both ends of the ball, okay? I do believe that the play calling, that if you watched the 49ers in the playoffs and you watched them near the end of the regular season, this is their MO. They start off slowly and then they make a frantic comeback in the second half. Now, there's two things I want to talk about, okay? One thing is the original game plan for all these games I'm talking about may not have been as well planned in the first half. But in my opinion, the coaching staff, including the coach, the head coach, Jim Harbaugh, and the players of the 49ers make a very good halftime adjustments to be able to right the wrongs of the first half and come back and either win the game or make it close in the second half of the games that I'm talking about. So I was very impressed. I think regardless of the fact is what the score was, I was very impressed with how the 49ers, and they did it before, they did it in the last game was very impressed that they, in the second half, they got their act together and played like they should have played in the first half of the Super Bowl. But this is a team on the rise. Team on the rise. Not quite there yet. Just think about this. 2010-2011, 49ers go to the playoffs and go to the NFC Championship and lose with Alex Smith. Following season, 7 or 8 games into the season, Alex Smith gets hurt. Colin Kaepernick takes over. The play of the 49ers, including Michael Crabtree, gets elevated, and the 49ers get to the NFC, get to the Super Bowl. Okay, so 2011-2012, they get to the NFC Championship game and they lose. 2012-2013, they get to the Super Bowl and they lose. High expectations are for the 49ers next year, next season, starting the 2013-2014 season, to get to the Super Bowl and not just get there, to win it. Because each year, this young team has progressively gotten better and has progressed from the championship to the Super Bowl. So I'm looking for big things from Colin Kaepernick and company. This kid, that was his 10th game starting as a starter for the 49ers when he started in the Super Bowl. That was his first, that was his 10th game, only the 10th game that he started. So that means to me that the ceiling is very high for Colin Kaepernick, and he can only get better with a OTAs, training camp, off-season programs, and spending time with his wide receivers and with his tight end, refining their timing. So when they get to preseason, OTAs, preseason, off-season workouts or whatever, they are working on clicking on all cylinders and will be a lot more effective. Because he's got the legs. He just needs to time it down with his receivers. And he had a very good rapport with Michael Crabtree when he took over the starting reins. And then Vernon Davis for the last two playoff games really came on as a force. And I think that's not going to change. I think that's only going to get better. Because now you have weapons. Now you have weapons. Frank Gore sprinkled in with a little LaMichael James. You have Michael Crabtree, and you have Vernon Davis. Now check this out: Michael Crabtree and Vernon Davis, over 100 yards. Crabtree had 5 receptions. Davis had 6 receptions. Crabtree, 109 yards receiving. Davis, 104. Crabtree only got targeted 10 more times. I mean, 2 more times than Davis. Davis got targeted 8. Crabtree got targeted 10 times. Randy Moss is probably not going to be there. But A.J. Jenkins, I think, is going to emerge. I think that the... a rookie of last year was somewhat of a disappointment, but supposedly he's going to be working off season with Colin Kaepernick to get the timing down and to be able to understand the offense, especially in the pass game. Excuse me, a lot better than he was than his comprehension was when. During the regular season. So expect big things from Colin Kaepernick. He had 62 yards rushing. I would think he should have had 67, meaning he could have gotten to the end zone for the second time. But it is what it is. Um, the defense is only going to get better. The offense is only going to get better with a little more, with more experience with the quarterback. That's basically what all I have to say about the Super Bowl. Oh, you know what? I did want to say this. Let me bring this out. I saw an article on ProFootballTalk.com, and it had to do with Terrell Suggs, and the caption of it is Suggs says, "I thought Kaepernick was all hype, but I was wrong." And I'm going to read this. This is was posted today by Michael David Smith from ProFootballTalk.com. Ravens outside linebacker Terrell Suggs admits that before the Super Bowl, he didn't think much of 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick. This is a quote from Suggs, who he would talk to Jim Rome. "Going into the game, I thought he was all hype," end quote. Another quote. He's only had 9 starts, and then I'm going down the line at the teams he's playing, and I'm like, okay, all right. He's got some good stats, but we will see." End quote. But after seeing Kaepernick pass for 302 yards and run for 62 yards against the Ravens in the Super Bowl, Terrell Suggs is a believer. This is a quote. "When you go in there and you're playing a guy like that, I hate quarterbacks, but that kid is the truth, and I have the utmost respect for him. I don't think he needs to hold his head down at all because he's going to play in a few, in parentheses, Super Bowls. Everyone who watched the Super Bowl had to come away impressed with Kaepernick, even a Raven who hates quarterbacks." That's what I'm telling you, people. I'm telling you. This kid, top 10. Next year, top 10 quarterback. What? You say? Trust me when I say this. Top 10 quarterback, especially in fantasy football. This kid's a top 10 quarterback. He's a running threat to get into the end zone, and he definitely can pass the ball down the field. Another year under his belt, like I said, another off-season program and preseason working with his tight end and his wide receivers. I'm telling you, trust me when I say this, Colin Kaepernick is going to be lights out. And you know the good thing about this? You know the good thing about this is this. Unlike Michael Vick, and hopefully not RG3, I think you know where I'm going here with this, is that these guys, for all intents and purposes, are competitors, but they don't know how to slide. So, therefore, they get themselves in situations where they get hurt. And that's that hurts the team. And if they're not on the field, they can't make any plays. But on the field, they make plays. And they can throw the ball, I think, and believe it or not, I think that, and he's only played 1 year, and he's only played, 14, 15 games, whatever it was. But I think he's a better passer, and I'm talking about RG3, than Michael Vick. I think he reads defenses better than Michael Vick, and even though I'm only looking at his body of work for one rookie year. But the problem is these guys don't know how to slide or go out of bounds when it's necessary. If you watch Colin Kaepernick, he's very smart and very judicious on the way he runs. If it's time to slide, he's got no problem sliding. If it's time to run out of bounds, he definitely has no time, no problem doing that. He doesn't take any crazy hits. One, because I think he doesn't want to, and two, he realizes he has to stay in the game in order for his team to have the best chance, in his opinion, to work. I mean, to win. So that's what I'm saying. This kid's going to be durable. I don't see this kid getting hurt anytime soon, unless he happens to take a freakish hit, and I don't think that's going to happen. I think he knows that he needs to be in the game, and he knows how to take care of himself. Same thing for Russell Wilson. I think his upside is huge, too. He does the same thing. When it's time to walk out, run out of bounds, he'll do that. He doesn't have a problem with that. It's time to slide, no problem. I'll slide. I don't want to take that hit from the linebacker or the safety. No way. If I can avoid it. Even though the RG3 won the Rookie of the Year, RG3 needs to learn how to slide. He needs to be a little bit more smarter on taking care of his body, because the fact is, you can see how effective and how much needed he is for the Washington Redskins, and he does himself no good trying to get that extra yard when you have a running back as dynamic as Alfred Morris, or you can pass the ball to get that extra yard in the next down. You can't do that on the sidelines if you hurt. So I think he'll play better. Hopefully he'll come back from his knee surgery and be able to perform like he did in the past. But it's going to take him a bit, because he's got the extent of his knee surgery. So hopefully we'll see some type of remnants of RG3. But I think probably not this year. The following year is when RG3, for the most part, will be a better choice will be better suited to make the plays that he made before he got hurt, because he'll have a year under his belt. I mean, everybody's different. Like just like AP, no one thought he'd come back from his devastating knee injury as quickly as he did, and he winds up winning the MVP, running for 9 yards, 8 yards short of breaking Eric Dickerson's record. So he had a monster year, but is that the wave of the future with these knee injuries now? These players coming back a lot better because of the rehab, or is AP just a freak athlete and has healing powers like none other, was able to do what most guys that have an injury like that aren't able to do? I got to believe that for the most part, that AP is the exception to the rule. Even though that Jamaal Charles, who had an ACL injury, but he had it in the beginning of the season. AP had it at the end of the football season. Big difference. And I also expect Jamaal Charles to come out next year, or this coming year, this coming football season, like Stormbusters, especially with Andy Reid being the head coach there. You'll hear me say this again and again, over and over again, that LeSean McCoy, Brian Westbrook, look up the stats of those two guys under Andy Reid as a head coach, and take that to the next level, because Jamaal Charles' rush per average is above both those guys, and he can catch the ball out of the backfield. He may not be as stoutly built, but he's got the quick, and he's got the offensive line to be able to make a lot more explosive plays than those two guys. I'm not taking away from anything from Brian Westbrook or LeSean McCoy, but I like Jamaal Charles to be contending for the number one. And you heard it here. You heard it here first. This is February 9th, 2013. Mark this down. I'm looking for Jamaal Charles. He'll probably get drafted in fantasy football within the first five picks, of, especially first five running backs. But I'm looking for Jamaal Charles, barring injury, to be the number one back in fantasy football. The number one back in fantasy football. I know that's a bold statement. I know a lot of people won't believe that. We're talking about, come on, he said AP, Arian Foster, Ray Rice, LeSean McCoy, Trent Richardson. You know, you can go on and on about these running backs, but understand what I'm saying here, okay? Marshawn Lynch, Doug Martin, and you're going to say Jamaal Charles, you say he's going to be the number one, all said and done. That's right. That's right. That's what I'm saying. I know it's a bold statement. I know it's only February 9th, but I'm saying this. Barring injury. Last year. Not this past year, but the year before that, LeSean McCoy, 20 touchdowns, had a crazy year, okay? This fantasy season, he was picked within the first five of the running backs because of his prior season, okay? Against a horrible, season of the Kansas City quarterbacks, and with teams knowing that Jamaal Charles was the only game in town, meaning he was the only really good explosive player that Kansas City had. Jamaal Charles ran for over 1,500 yards, 1,509 yards with an average of 5.3. He had five touchdowns, okay, with a team that he was their best offensive weapon because of the inadequacy of the quarterback position. So all teams knew they were going to run the ball, okay? All teams were stacking the line. All teams were their main thing to do against the Kansas City Chiefs is to stop the running game. And Kansas City, for the last few years, was one of the most running teams in the NFL. And now you're getting Andy Reid with a more dynamic play calling, more imaginative play calling and offense, and you have a player dynamic with the speed of Jamaal Charles, plus the fact is this is his second year from an ACL. Usually, and it there are exceptions to the rule, and AP is one of them. Jamaal Charles coming off an ACL that he had at the beginning of last season, beginning of the 2011 season, 2012 season, 2012-2013 season, he runs for 1,500 yards. So AP should be better. Jamaal Charles should be better. Jamaal Charles' speed is not – AP doesn't even have the speed of Jamaal Charles. AP doesn't catch the ball that much out of the backfield compared to Jamaal Charles. So and Jamaal Charles – has a lot of explosive plays. I understand that AP had a lot of explosive plays. I understand that he was the offense for the Minnesota Vikings. Just the same thing. Didn't have a good quarterback play. The passing game was limited because of that. Teams are stacking the line up against AP. And things went AP's way, and he ran for over 2,000 yards. Well, AP's going to come back to the pack. He's not going to run for another 2,000 yards. People who draft him up there in fantasy football are chasing last year's numbers. You don't chase yet last year's numbers. Jamaal Charles has been consistent six to five yards consistently each year per rush, average. Look at his record. Look at his record. AP is all over the place, all right? For his career, Jamaal Charles has 784 attempts and 4,536 yards, which averages out to 5.83 a carry. Almost 6 yards a carry. Almost 6 yards. Just listen to that. Almost 6 yards a carry. All right? Last season, he had only 35 receptions, which is a career low for him because he's usually catching the ball a lot more. And he will catch the ball a lot more with Andy Reid. That's a guaranteed. Let's go to AP since everybody he's the gold standard. He's what everybody aspires to be. Let's go to AP and see what his stats are. Go from there. I'm gonna bring him up now. He's 28. He's on the defense. Adrian Peterson. Okay, AP. Last year, okay, 2012 season, he ran for 384 attempts with 2,097 yards, and he had a 6 yard average. All right? His career, he's got 1,754 attempts with 8,849 yards. So he's going to get clipped the 10,000 yards mark, barring injury, 2013-2014 season. His rushing average is 5.0, okay, for his career. All right? 5.0 for his career. Jamaal Charles is almost a full yard better at 5.8. 5.8. Adrian Peterson ran for six yard average this year. Jamaal Charles ran for 5.3. Okay? And that was a career year for AP. Career year for AP. Okay? So, in my opinion, is this. LeSean McCoy had a career year two years ago. Most guys, let me put it this way. Most guys who have career years come down to the pack. And I got Mr. FSP here. I didn't see him for a while, but he's on here now. Welcome in, Mr. Gardner.
What's going on, homie?
Nothing much. I don't know if you've been listening to my little rant, but I've been talking about who I think is going to wind up being the number one running back in
fantasy.
I
hear you down in AP. I hear you down in AP.
Excuse me?
I hear you downing AP.
No, I wasn't downing AP. I'm making this, and this is a statistical fact, okay?
A statistical fact.
AP's average over his career has been 5.0. Jamaal Charles' average has been 5.8, almost a full yard more than AP, okay? Mm-hmm. AP ran for over 2,000 yards, almost 2,100 yards this year. And Jamaal Charles ran for a little over 1,500 yards.
Mm-hmm.
The quarterback play on both these teams was horrible. So both these teams were the main guns on the offense, the two running backs. But in my opinion is this. Not much is going to change with Christian Ponder, in my opinion. Okay? The head coach is the same. And basically all the pieces, maybe Percy Harvin will come back. And if that's the case, Percy Harvin is probably going to be incorporated more in the offense, meaning that AP is going to get less touches, meaning that he's not going to get close to that 2,000-yard season again. And most times when a guy have a career year like that, especially if it's 2,000 yards, i.e. Chris Johnson, they come back down to the pack. The reason I'm saying this is look at the statistics that Brian Westbrook and and LeSean McCoy had under Andy Reid as a coach. I expect this season Jamal Charles to not even come close to what he has. I think he's going to explode even larger. 1 year back more from an ACL, a different offensive philosophy, and I guarantee you Andy Reid is going to get a better quarterback in there. With all that, with those three things in there, and it also added factor with Andy Reid using a dynamic running back like he used Brian Westbrook, like he used LeSean McCoy, Jamal Charles is going to absolutely explode. There's no doubt in my mind he's going to absolutely explode. That's the reason why I'm saying, and I make this bold statement, like I said, February 9th, 2013, come the end of the 2013-2014 season, excuse me, Jamal Charles will be the number one back barring injury from fantasy football.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Fancy Pants. I'm not saying he won't be in the top five or might not be the number one, but going into the draft, who is number one going into the draft overall? And I'm still waiting on my PayPal money, son.
You'll get it. You'll get it. Mm-hmm. You'll get it.
And promote the baseball league. Come on.
Okay, well, you're on here. Go ahead. Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time again. It's fantasy baseball time. Last year, Jerry, he led from beginning to end and won the championship. First time ever playing fantasy baseball. He received a lot of coaching and mentoring.
Get the heck, here you go. You know, I shouldn't let you do this, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, you received a lot of coaching and mentoring from a wise and distinguished woman who pretty much drafted and ran his team for him.
Stop.
Ladies and gentlemen, go to yahoo.com. Look up Fantasy Sports and Politics. That's the baseball league we're in. It's a $50 buy-in. The draft is March 23rd at 3 p.m. It's an 80-20% split. Now, if the league decides to vote to have a third-place finisher, then we'll pay that one, too. We're going to go upwards of 18 teams. As many as 18 teams can join the league. It's a 10-by-10. It's a little different than most 5x5s. All NL and AL baseball players are eligible. We get more in detail with it, but I'm at work. I really can't stay long. I just wanted to check in on Jerry and see if anybody called in today, because yesterday's show is still climbing the charts in the archives. But you're listening to the best program on the internet, Fantasy Sports and Politics, closely followed by the Master Plan. You know, so JT is the host of. He's my right hand man, and he does a lot of things, and he takes care of business. So I'm gonna let you carry on with the show.
Okay. Thank you for that. Yes.
Who's number one? Who's number one? Who's gonna be number one next year?
Who's gonna be the number one?
Overall.
Well, like I said, I don't know, and you probably weren't listening at the time when I said it. Everybody's going to be drafting APU number one, and like I said, you're going to be chasing last year's numbers. That's what you, when you draft him, Adrian Peterson, you're going to be just like you did with LeSean McCoy this year when you drafted him so high. You're chasing last year's numbers. He's not going to be the number one back come the end of the fantasy season. I tell you that right now. Not going to happen.
Okay, well, who's going to be number one in the draft?
No, what I'm saying is this. The number one running back that people are going to be drafting for the majority of the people that are going to be drafting running back in the first round, they get a chance to draft AP. Number one, they're going to be taking AP. But like I said, in my opinion, and I think this is documented statistical fact, when you have a running back running for a career high or doing something that the highest he's ever done in his career, you're chasing numbers especially when you draft them number one the next year. You're chasing last year's numbers, and he's not going to repeat that. That's not going to happen. Anybody who's ran for over 2,000 yards has come back to the pack the following season. Jamal Lewis.
I guess that. But
Chris
Johnson. Who do you think is number one? Who do you think is it going to be? Arian Foster? Is it going to be Ray Rice? Is it going to be a quarterback? Who do you think should be number one?
Who do I think is going to be number one? Who I think should be number one?
Yeah.
You know, I'm. Let me think.
Go to baseball. Go to baseball. Save yourself.
No,
save yourself.
I think you know what. This is who I think should be number one, and because I think there's still some more left in him, and he's more versatile than AP, and I think Arian Foster. I'm not being partial because I'm a Texas fan, but I think Arian Foster should be the number one back, especially in PPR. If you're in PPR, there's no way. There's no way in all God's creation that I would pick AP first. It would be Arian Foster. And followed very closely, and this is up in the air because these three guys could be 2, 3, 4, in my opinion, especially in PPR. That'd be C.J. Spiller, Doug Martin, and Jamal Charles, especially in PPR. Ray Rice, I don't know if that offense is going to depend on Ray Rice when Joe Flacco gets his contract as much as in the prior years. It may be more of a passing team with Ray Rice sprinkled in there. Doug Martin, I think he can only get better, and along with more play in the passing game. I'm telling you, Alfred Morris is up in the top 10, but I really, really, I can't wait for next fantasy season because I know the people aren't going to be drafting unless they listen to what I'm going to have to say. If they listen to what I have to say, Jamal Charles is going to explode next year. That move to Andy Reid, people don't realize, unless they do their homework, which I think a lot of people will, that Jamal Charles is going to explode next year. Explode.
Right.
I can't stress it that much any more than I can.
All right. Before you explode, I got to get ready to go to work.
Go to work.
Do some baseball, man. Prep for the baseball. I want to get you. Where's mom at? She's supposed to be on the show to keep you under control. She's supposed to keep you in line.
You want me to do baseball so you can pick my brain so you can try to beat my ass.
I'm not gonna be at the draft. I'm not gonna be at the draft because I'll be in the field. But
yeah, but you'll be able to pre-select your team.
This is true, but you need mom there to help you, and I want mom there so she can enlighten the listeners on some real baseball facts. We know you just borrow them from her.
What?
But it's okay.
You know what? You know.
Hey, I love you, too. Jay, I gotta go.
Enjoy.
All right, later.
All right, people, that was Mr. Gardner. As you know, he's normally on here, but he just wanted to check in and give me his 2 cents. I'll be doing baseball very shortly. Pitchers and catchers are going to be coming, I think, this week or very shortly, if I'm not mistaken. So when they do, we'll be talking about that. I'm still a football guy at heart, but, I mean, I understand that baseball season and baseball drafting for the fantasy is coming up very shortly. So we will be getting that out. But with that being said, you know, I really have to get out of here. This show is an hour today. It's not an hour and a half. And I want to thank those who listened, those who are going to be listening in the archives. I appreciate your interest. I appreciate your paying attention to what we have to say. Some of the things I've said in this program are maybe food for thought. Maybe you want to write it down come fantasy football season or come football season to see how correct I am. I definitely will keep it in the back of my mind what I said. I've said a lot of things. Some of them have come true. Some of them haven't. But running backs are what I like in fantasy football, and it happened to be my forte. And I think I'm almost on point with Jamaal Charles. With that being said, I want to thank you for joining me today. I want to thank Victor for calling in and spending a short amount of time with us. I hope you have a safe weekend. For those in the Northeast, hopefully you've either dug out or have someone to help you dug out. Do it safely. There's a lot of snow out there in certain areas. We're fortunate enough where I'm at to get only about 6 inches. 6 inches is 6 inches. But further north of me, in Jersey and quite naturally in New York and the New England area, they've gotten multiple feet of snow. So be careful out there. Be safe, stay warm, and enjoy the weekend.
Fantasy sports and politics.
Get ready to rumble.
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got to live, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.